Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world. All right, and welcome back to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. I have for you today another installment of the interview I did with TC at the Minnesota Black Robe Regiment podcast. And, you know, I thought I'd be done today, but chopped it up to another about 30-minute segment. I didn't realize how long I was actually on with TC there a few weeks back. But this is another good one. We talked a little bit about tribalism, a little Russia-Ukraine stuff, JFK, my authoritative take on the JFK assassination, and we'll talk a little bit about podcasting. And so just take a listen, and we'll be back with you right after we finish there with TC, and hopefully we can send you off next week or later this week with the last installment there. And so anyway, here we go. My appearance, or part of my appearance, with TC of the Minnesota Black Robe Regiment podcast.
The thing that I think differentiates the left, which operate purely off of an emotional drive, it feels good to be against this. It feels good to be, you know, for that, which is the entire drive of social justice. Mm-hmm. It's why they have to have that qualifier before justice. It has to say social, but it's a good feeling. You know, it has created.
It's like this woke mindset. You know, you're on the right. You're on the right side because all these other people are now
agreeing.
Like the domino effect of like, oh yeah, we're on the right side. But like, are you really? What?
Right. And it feels good. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. What matters is how it makes me feel because all of these people come out in support of my position. And so there is this emotional drive, which I say it's emotional drive devoid of intellect. And but I also think, and this is what I've
largely, told KD, largely, I mean, give largely. Some people some credit, but
is that we also then can see on the other side of the spectrum a completely detached intellect from emotion, where there is no emotional response at all to, you know, to what we're observing, which can be just as dangerous when you have a purely intellectual response to something that can lead to severe problems, in that it takes away the empathy aspect. And you can have an incredibly hard time then when you completely detach the emotion or the empathy from the intellect. You have two sides that are going to end up in the same place. You're going to have an emotional tyranny, or you're going to have an intellectual tyranny.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I wouldn't even call it intellectual to any degree. I mean,
when I say intellectual, I mean just strictly based off of this is what I think, and therefore I think it, therefore it is right.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to have the empathy, you have to have the emotion to retard in the sense of slow down.
Yeah, I get it.
An overly intellectual response to something where it's strictly, I think this, therefore it is. Yeah. Well, KD says social bipolarism. Yeah, really. And you had mentioned that earlier, the kind of the bipolar mentality of left versus right.
I mentioned the bipolar world insofar as you got the Soviet Union here and the West led by America over here. And the global politics is totally different anymore than it was back then. I mean, it all ended in 1991, really, when the Soviet Union crumbled.
We had no enemy to fight anymore.
We had no enemy, but that's the way, though. Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned it last week or the week before on my show. I said that is these people haven't even thought about anything different since then.
Right.
Anyway, for like our foreign policy establishment, they're looking for enemies to fight. And they're looking to go out and fight because, oh, and now it's Russia, 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 Russia. It's like, well, no, Russia proper should probably be on the traditionalist American side, because that's a pretty traditional nation under the whole kind of once you rip the skin of communism off of it. It's a relatively traditional populace. They've really suffered the effects and then the after effects of communism and, you know, some of the cultural degradation. But there was still that element, that remnant or whatever you might want to call it, of cultural tradition. Traditionalism. And there's the Russian Orthodox Church in Russia has sprouted once again, and that's their, I would probably say that I don't know the numbers, but it's certainly not what it was pre-communism, let's say. But anyway, like it's a traditional nation. A lot of Russians are patriotic. I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to see. We don't get any news this way where, you know, what does the average Russian man on the street think about invading the Ukraine? But, I think what originally happened in the Ukraine was that Russia got its traditional base back, and then the whole area was, you know, Russians and that wanted to ally with Russians or with Russia rather than the government of Ukraine, which is a total nightmare in another story. And then in the Donbass region and so forth, the only areas they originally went into were people who in plebiscites, they said, we want to be, if we have the choice, we're going to go to Russia, not Ukraine. And there's a bunch of that stuff over there in Eastern Europe that's happening. And, you know, we don't get that angle of reporting. And there's so much stuff we don't know. And it's like, just, put the blue and yellow flag in your profile and right. you're great. And going back to what you talked about earlier, it's like,
I want to show you something because I think you're hitting on a thought process. And this is going to be a little shocking to people. So because I don't think people understand this Russo-Ukrainian conflict and just exactly how much drum beating is going on. But to some people, this may not seem as severe to them as it was to me when I read it. But when I read this comment on Twitter, and I don't know if you can, you see it? I've got the, I'll read it. Okay. This is a guy who claims he's a vet of the United States military. He says, mm-hmm. Russian bots are actually pretty stupid. And this is a response to something that I said. The sanctions seems to have made them super desperate. I hope, just listen to this, people. I hope Ukraine bombs the Red Square. I hope to live to see the day internal terrorist attacks begin to rock the city centers of Moscow. This is an American.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the whole Russo-Ukrainian conflict goes, I have no dog in the fight.
Right. Other than, I don't care about either side, honestly.
Other than I don't want the U.S. supporting either side. And we're right. happen to be on the Ukrainian side. That's the only reason I'm semi against the Ukrainian side, is because I don't want our blood and treasure being sacrificed over there. And, you know, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. decided that, we're going to start paying for Ukrainian pensions. What about like funding or paying off our debts in the United States first before you start giving people that you have no common ground with, really, we're against Russia. Russia. I mean, why are we against Russia? We should not be against Russia.
Brian, Russia's evil. We've always been against the Russians. Always.
I don't know that.
We fought Russia during World War II.
Yeah, we did. But
we
they
fought
were,
them. They were, the Soviet Union was our enemy.
They were on our side. Unfortunately, they shouldn't have been, but they were. But we peacefully negotiated to purchase Alaska from them. That maybe that might have been the crowning
that,
achievement
that was it
of
right
Lincoln.
There. They're mad about
the crowning
Alaska.
Achievement of Lincoln. Seward bought negotiated the purchase of Alaska from
good
Russia.
Old Seward's folly. The irony, I think the irony for people who are paying attention is that there are voices out there, you know, especially like yours, and I have really appreciated, I don't want to say this, I've appreciated the fact that you come to these conversations that you have, you know, with your audience, and clearly when you do a podcast, you're not just talking to yourself, you're having a conversation with people, even if they're not talking back, but you come to these conversations, and you're having this very reasoned, intellectual, interaction and you're able to take a step back and say, look, here's a figure. And let's go back and look at, you know, your comment on, you know, Nixon's book and what he had to say in there and how taken aback you were to be reading this from a guy like Nixon, of course, who was, mm-hmm. you know, very frequently in people's minds is like the worst president in the history of the United States.
Yeah.
Just vilified. I mean, was he great? There were some things that he did really well. I think his handling of China was phenomenal. He wasn't stellar either. But when you read
the domestic
comments,
front, he was a total disaster.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, I have a hard time finding anybody that's not been a disaster on the domestic front in a long time. Right. But ever since, I don't know, it was like the 1860s, the domestic presidents have just not. Anyway, when you look at the way people interact, there's this very binary black and white. Either this president's all bad or everything right. This president did was good. And there has to be an ability within us to take a step back, look at these people as individuals and not see them as rulers and therefore what they do must be right or all wrong, but say, okay, they're human beings. They're, you know, to use theological language, they're fallen or they're, you know, they're broken. If you, you know, to use a modern version, they're going to make bad decisions and they might make some good decisions, but being able to assess what they're doing and what has been done throughout history and be able to do that from a balanced perspective like you do is not easy, because it is incredibly easy to fall into a narrative of, oh, this person's not on my side, therefore everything they're doing is wrong. Mm. And that, for me, one of the most eye-opening places was to take a step back and walk away from the perspective of like JFK being, you know, okay, yes, he was assassinating, that's sad, but overall he was bad for the country. When I look back then and actually engage with what JFK was fighting for, he was actually a pretty good guy.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue on both sides of that. I mean, I grew up in a family where JFK was, geez, like he, like grandparents, like lived in Boston. One of my grandfathers is from Boston and a huge JFK fan, you know, man of about the same age. And, like we got one of our own in, you know, and I get it. It's the tribalism. And, mm-hmm. you know, my dad was a huge fan because he got to go like along on, you know, the campaign. We came to Portland and, because my grandparents were involved in the campaign and he loved them. And then he was super into all this JFK assassination stuff that was in like, that basically really took hold in the 80s and early 90s and kind of culminated with the JFK movie that, oh gosh, he loved that thing. But the thing is,
yeah, like, he did it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't come down anywhere on it other than I hate it. I hate the talk about it. And there's too many books and too many theories. And there's just not enough information out there for anybody to make a rational decision, as far as I know. But the thing was, I was like in high school. Yeah, I got JFK is probably the best president ever was. Because he's an Irishman and he's from Boston, and that's where my tradition, you know, half of my tradition comes from. And so there we go.
Is it the last name? Is that what it is?
Huh?
Is it the last name? Is that O'Leary? Is that got something to do with it? I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kennedy, O'Leary, they're Boston Irish, man. And, and so, but then I start reading more history, and I don't, like you said, he's probably a good guy, but he was up against it from the beginning. The more I read about it, it's like, I'm not even going to pass judgment on the guy. Like you said about other president, he did some good things and did some bad things. Ultimately, I think it was kind of a wash, but what his assassination did was brought in LBJ, who's Lyndon Baines Johnson, who was one of the worst presidents of all time. No doubt about it. And he got us embroiled in Vietnam thick. Granted, Kennedy had put troops in there, or actually Eisenhower, I believe, did first put troopers in there. But LBJ, the way he prosecuted that war, was criminal. And anyway, Nixon gets a bad rap for it because he tried to end it by doing things that should end wars, but you know, the destruction of humanity. I don't know. So there's a lot of things there. And
right, but there again, that goes to this cultural philosophical perspective of America, which is this, it has very much, And I'll throw this all the way back to the Civil War. It's very much has to be this mentality of it's us versus them, and this pitting of one side against the other, and this inability for us to find common ground with somebody who may be on the other side of the aisle from us, and say, where can we work together for the furtherance and the betterance of our republic? And nobody wants to. I'm painting with a very broad brush, but by and large, most people don't want to do that. And you look at the Rage Against War Machine rally that was just held last Sunday, you know, a week ago tomorrow, out in Washington, D.C., and how both sides of the aisle, both the left and the right, have come out and talked about these horrible people at the Rage Against the War Machine rally. And, you know, in Rachel Maddow's comments about, you know, these radical Russian, you know, shills who were there, and it was only a few people. And I mean, there were several thousand people there, and they were from every walk of life.
Yeah.
They were from every political perspective who were literally there saying, do not enmesh us in this war.
Right.
And the political machine wants to grind them out and spit them out, Yeah. That's it. That's all they want is they want us to remain divided.
Well, I think I would say you mentioned the Civil War, and then and now in the kind of in the middle of all that, you had World War II, which probably was the most united the quote unquote United States have ever been since maybe. And I don't even know if I could count the Revolutionary War aftermath as part of that. But the United States as a polity and a people was probably the most united then during those years of World War II than they ever have before or after. And which is it's and you look at that and you're like, it takes a war that maybe we shouldn't have even been in the first place. I mean, if you read Buchanan's Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, you can, I would highly recommend that is to get a background. But again, you not to get into it, but too much, but you have this mythology of World War II. It's like we saved, you know, we saved Jews from the Holocaust. It's like,
no, we didn't.
Well, we did, but that's not the impetus from going into war. We had no
idea it was even happening, really.
We'd
heard rumors. We heard rumors, but we had no idea.
And the fact alone that we allied with the Soviet Union, or the United States government allied with the Soviet Union, a major blunder. I mean, Joseph Stalin, perhaps, I mean, this is a bold statement. I'm not coming out either way, but there's an argument that he was way worse for the world than Adolf Hitler.
As bad as Hitler was.
And Hitler is
horrible.
The most terrible guy in history, perhaps.
Yeah. It Stalin murdered more.
More, yeah.
Of his
so he
own
has a,
people.
He has a bigger body count, I guess.
Yeah,
Stalin.
Massively.
Of his own people.
Of his own people.
Yeah.
And
Uncle
and
Joe, we called him.
Yeah. We're not able, and that's the thing, I think. And which is there again is, I think, the appeal of what I've heard listening to you has been there's just a lack of critical thought. We have to not you. You don't have a lack of critical thought. But what you point out not even intentionally, but throughout your show, what I hear is here's this critical approach to history. Here's a critical approach to current events. And whatever the case might be, whatever it is you're talking about, here's this critical approach is how should we be responding to this? And I think that's the appeal of so much of what I hear in a lot of the listening that I do. I listen to a podcast that's definitely comes from the left, but their entire existence is a critical approach to QAnon. Definitely leftist, but I agree with so much of what they have to say as they approach the topic of the Q phenomenon. Now, everything to
I
them
I don't know much about that, to be honest. I know a couple friends are like either into it or totally against it or whatever.
I'm highly critical of it.
Yeah.
But
I never dove into it either way. So.
Yeah. Well, Michael Rechtenwald, who I've been in communication with to get him on to talk about it, because he loves to destroy it, calls it, it's the biggest honeypot in history. And it has all the earmarks of what the Soviets did in the early days of their work, which was to plant misinformation about this a rise up of the people, the populace, to overthrow the shackles of the wicked communist Bolshevism of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And they did that intentionally. Their propaganda machine, their intelligence
put
machine,
propaganda on the other end, on the other side.
They planted this anti-Soviet information
in order to get a reaction that was 2x then, or 10x the other way.
Yeah, that sucked these anti-Bolshevik people in, and then they used it to discredit them
or
arrest them.
Yeah.
Or placate them into thinking that some rescue was coming for them, which, you know, and so I'm listening to these QAnon, this QAnon Anonymous podcast and going, we could have a debate philosophically about your leftism all day long, but we agree on this. And that's what's missing in critical thought in politics today. Mm-hmm. And look at the Trump wing of the populist movement right now. You have to be, if you're not for Trump, you are for Biden in their mind.
Right.
And you cannot critique anything that Trump did. And any critique of Trump at all is met with, well, it's not his fault. Mm-hmm. It's not his fault. You point out that Trump is the one who really empowered people like Gavin Newsom and Commissar Timothy Walz of the People's State of Marxisota to do what they did with lockdowns. And they're like, no, that wasn't Trump's fault. But it was the declaration of a national emergency that opened the door for all of these governors to just go hog wild.
Yeah.
They were waiting for that. You point that out and it's like, well, he didn't have a choice. There's no ability for people to disengage from their loyalty and say what's reasonable here.
I have a lot of thoughts on the whole Trump thing. But
you're a Buchananite, so I can't imagine why.
No, I mean, I like the rhetoric in his, a lot of it anyway, in the campaign. And even when he was president, he didn't do any of it, hardly. He promised a lot of things. Ultimately, a disappointment. I thought a lot of, even though I voted for Pat Buchanan in 2000, I thought ultimately, especially like you mentioned 9/11 and after that, you know, maybe other than World War II, probably the most united the country had been, and George W. Bush was president, and he had all these things that, you know, I thought he was now on the right track after running a campaign that I didn't necessarily agree with, but I certainly liked him better than Albert Gore. And but
you used his full name. He's in trouble.
Yeah. And but so I was like, okay, well, it's a president. He's going into his second term. He's got all this political capital that he can do, and he just got worse. He got so bad in those next 4 years. And I'm like, oh man, I put a lot of faith in this guy that he'd do the right thing. And then, you know, I got, you know, quickly disabused of that hope.
Well, he paved the way for
hope and change.
Right. Because he paved the way for at best a centrist war hawk who was going to only continue and actually, in my opinion, would have made the conflict that we were in for the last 20 some years worse. Mm-hmm. If McCain had gotten in, we would have bombed everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody. You cannot find a place that John McCain didn't want to blow up.
One of the first places my name was relatively public in the local newspaper in Portland, Oregon, called the Oregonian. And I used to submit letters or op-eds to me, or maybe their policies, they take so many of them. But the first one was in the lead up to the 2008 election. And I basically trashed both candidates, but I said McCain's better on taxes and judges. And, you know, that's probably the choice. And that, I mean, if that is what the choice is, it's terrible. And we saw the same thing with Trump. Trump was good, if not great, on judges, but pretty much everything else, like, you can just leave it because a lot of the stuff made it worse. But, you know, I can't remember who I was talking to. I was saying like a mannequin might have got more votes against Hillary Clinton than Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, that's not untrue. Like, talk about a polarizing character for a presidential candidate.
She's hated. I loathe her. Yeah. I loathe her existence. Yeah. And her husband, like, I is slightly below her on my loathing scale, but like she's terrible and an evil person. Like, no doubt about it.
Adam says that was him that said the mannequin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It will probably come out in a few weeks if that was the case, if it was Adam. Yeah.
Don't you hate that when you've had a conversation with somebody and they say something that's really profound and then you can't remember who the heck it was that said it?
Yeah. I recorded several podcasts yesterday. None of them were released because I had a few other things going on in the afternoon when I normally would sit down and do my own. Ultimately, I said, well, yeah, we got long form tomorrow, so join in. And it was a little late notice for a lot of people, but hopefully we can spread the word.
Well, then the great thing is that, you know, they can always watch and they can apologize for not watching live by hitting the super thank you when they watch on the replay. So
great idea.
I cannot promise that that Brian will benefit at all from any super thank you that I get, but
but just subscribe to my Substack there.
Yes.
You can do it for free at briandeoleary.substack.com. Or my website is just briandeoleary.com.
You're really good at shilling for yourself. You've been doing this.
Not really.
So you are a probably fall closer to the paleo conservative side of things. You're a Buchananite. You have a lot, you know, voted for him in 2020. You start your show, you start out by doing a sports podcast. It kind of shifts to cultural commentary, social commentary, political commentary.
Still some sports.
Which you know you must be handling well, that because I still listen.
Yeah.
So, like the closest to sports I get is we have about 30 miles away. We got a semi-pro NAHL hockey team that I love to watch, but I only go with my daughter, and now she's got daughters of her own, and I'm an old man, and she's not ready to drag her soon to be three-year-old out to hockey games yet, but we'll get her there. Thanks for stopping by, Adam. If you're on Twitter, find me. Anyway, you're now kind of branching off and you're doing a lot of post-production stuff and you're doing a lot of help and wanting to help others who want to do this. And so tell me, and I won't keep you too much longer, but tell me a little bit about what your goal is now going forward. You're more of your
podcasting
business side. What do you got going on there?
Well, I mentioned earlier the Tom Woods School of Life, and we have these entrepreneurship groups because Tom's goal was to kind of get a bunch of people together of like mind and give them a way out of the cultural morass or whatever you might want to call it that we're dark. And then, so there's a lot of people who've kind of are in similar positions, me or maybe you or other folks who are just like, I'm so sick of all these people that I have to deal with on a daily basis and going to my job. And so there's a lot of people doing side hustles and, you know, I got like side hustle on top of side hustle trying to make things go. But so you get these groups and like people are doing all sorts of great, you know, great things. It's pretty amazing. And so I'm like, well, there's people that want a podcast and people that just talk to me and they want to know how to start or whatever. And it's like, well, I might as well just, I mean, lack of better terms, be a coach for them.
Right.
And so I'm working on just a couple folks, but we're going from what's your idea? How do you get, you know, what microphone do you use? What, you know, software do you use? And then that's a whole discussion in and of itself. But then how do you edit? Or do you want to just pay somebody to edit your stuff? How are you going to monetize it type thing? Or how are you going to try and monetize it? Because monetizing is, as you probably well know, it's like not just, okay, I'm going to monetize it. Here we go. Snap your fingers and you get money flowing at you. That's not the case. So my focus just in podcasting is to put out content. And, you know, and that's the first thing. Now, you know, the bigger your following, obviously more money just kind of rains down on you. And podcasting's a little harder than like terrestrial radio or whatever. I set up a business called O'Leary Digital. I just kind of put all my podcasts under that umbrella and say, anybody that wants to, you know, you don't have to brand it that way, but if you want to come in, you know, if you want to talk, I got a half hour, I put a link, you know, just talk for a half hour. about where you're at and then see if I can help you. Cause the impetus for this was I didn't ever see myself as being that guy, because 3 years ago, I had no clue. But I've done all this myself and with a little bit of help from my old co-host on my sports podcast, Tim, who took he took a lot of the load as far as editing and that stuff goes. And but after he couldn't do it anymore, which I don't blame him, and I kind of wish I stopped, but I didn't. And
and here you are.
Here I am. And
on a Saturday morning.
And so I learned a lot of the stuff myself, and I'm constantly learning how to do all that stuff. And like
there's a big learning curve on this
huge.
Too.
And it's not. Yeah. Okay. What I tell people, if they want to start a podcast, just start. That's the most important thing. Two, get yourself a microphone. Three, you probably need a computer. And after that, you can do a podcast if you have that, or a way to record the voice coming out of your microphone. You can do it on a voice recorder, whatever. There's all sorts of options, whether you send the audio file somehow to another person. But all you really need to get started is a microphone and like something legitimately to talk about, whether it's whatever you think about that day or if you have a theme. I think it's easier to have a theme. That's why I'm pretty excited about this show I'm doing with Adam here that'll come out, because we actually have like a outline, or not an outline. Each show might have an outline, but we have like we just have a particular scope of what we want to talk about. And on my daily show, I talk about kind of whatever I want. And you mentioned stuff about like I do like sports and politics, history. And one of my kind of oddly favorite things that I did was like for a week, I think earlier in the fall, I read an article in a magazine I subscribed to, one of only one, maybe two magazines that I subscribed to, called Chronicles. It's edited by Paul Gottfried. And on the cover.
So you're one of the surviving subscribers.
Yeah, did you listen to Tom Wood's podcast yesterday?
I did catch it, yeah.
Yeah, he said they went, like, in the 80s, they had 30,000 subscribers or something. And now they're down to 5,000, sell about 10,000 copies. But, I'm one of the 5,000, I guess. And
you still get a hard copy of it?
I still get the hard copy, yeah. And so
I haven't seen a hard copy magazine delivered to anybody in so long.
Yeah.
Doctor's offices, and they still got, like, 1970 editions of highlights.
Right, and so I was reading a few months back, the cover story had an essay by, I think it was Stanley Payne, who's a historian of University of Wisconsin, and he is probably the foremost historian, at least in today's world, Spain and the Spanish Civil War era and stuff. But it also had a cover story. The other cover story was the Confederate monument in Richmond, Virginia. Forget the guy's name, but Brian, I don't know if you guys listen to Brian McClanahan show. He actually talked about it a couple days
Bedford
after
Forest.
No, it's just a Confederate. They're trying to tear down all these statues and,
oh no, that's the one of just like kind of this generic Confederate soldier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, they were trying to even tear that down.
They're trying to tear it down and, you know, the whole thing around that. And anyway, so I talked about that a little bit. But then the other thing was an article by, I think it was Stanley Payne, but they had an article about the Spanish Civil War. And then it's a subject that is, I didn't know much about it until about 10, 12 years ago. And I really dove into it quite deeply. And so for about four and a half of those episodes that week, I just discussed what I knew about the Spanish Civil War. And again, like you mentioned earlier, like I come at it from a point of view that, yeah, you probably think, you know, Franco is equivalent to Hitler, and, you know, Spain was on the side of the Nazis, and, you know, he was against democracy, it's like the common myth of history has got it all wrong. I mean, you can listen to go back in the archives and listen to those shows. They're about a half hour a piece, but I think I come at it at an interesting perspective. I'm no means like a scholar. I'm an amateur scholar, but I've read a lot of the material and stuff on it other than most people I know. Most people don't know anything about
it. All right, folks can go back into the archives of, The O'Leary Review over at Substack right now. That's briandoleary.substack.com, where you can go and dig into the archives for all that stuff we mentioned. We have that Spanish Civil War series that week. I think it was back in November. You can take a look at that if you're at all interested in that part of history. But we have links in our show notes, and make sure to go over, if you haven't already, go to briandoleary.com, and you can opt in to for our mailing list over there. And we have a little checklist on, it's actually a checklist on time management, how I'm managing my time a bit better now. And you know, thanks to a lot of these tips I finally wrote down, maybe it can help you guys out too, if you're out there. But so that's a free checklist for y'all if you opt in. And we will see you tomorrow. And I'm not sure if we'll have the last part of this this conversation with TC from the Minnesota Black Robe Regiment podcast, or if we'll have some new stuff for you. I got a lot of stuff going on here in the next few days, and managing my time best I can. So anyway, thanks for tuning in, folks, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.